So we may still be waiting for the skies to fill up with people flying their personal jetpacks to work. I'd love to do that. But that doesn't mean there weren't a whole lot of other technological breakthroughs in 2015. We've convened a special Tech Tuesday panel today to look back on the major trends and discuss the various, I suppose you'd have to call them pretty cool things that arrived in the world in the last 12 months to make our lives a little bit easier. Sarah Al-Attam is from digital agency August. Welcome.
Thanks for having
And Supratim Adhikari is technology editor at the Australian newspaper. Hi, guys.
Hi.
Automation. Supratim, can I start with you? You've nominated automation as the big technology trend of the year. How much is automation changing the way we drive and engage with other devices?
Well, Patricia, look, automation in its heart is, I think, on the cusp of changing almost everything we do. And, you know, automation is not necessarily a new thing because, you know, robots have been slowly taking over our factory floors for quite a while. And so it's been a very subtle changes in this technology.
But it has happened in the industrial space than at home, hasn't it?
That's right. And that's why this year was really very interesting from that perspective, because you've now seen sort of a wholesale recognition that automation of processing of business, whether it's business process, whether it's, you know, number crunching, whether it's even trying to create algorithms that now help you find things quicker or better, is now becoming much more accessible. And as it becomes more accessible and it sort of goes out to the public a lot more, it brings out a lot more sort of, you know, it sort of fuels a lot more anxiety, right? And that's why 2015, we have not only Elon Musk now saying that, you know, we're going to create a new organization which looks at the development of artificial intelligence and AI, you know, for non-profit purposes. We've had fears of people saying that, you know, AI or automated weaponry may become the next stage for future arms race of sorts. And, you know, numerous sort of reports that came out this year, sort of looking for policy ideas or trying to create some sort of a framework to look at what happens when robots truly do, or automation really does replace a number of jobs that we take for granted today.
So the one job that I wouldn't mind replaced in my life is, well, my entire house being cleaned before I get home so that I'm not tortured by that extra job.
Well,
when can this happen for
me?
Well,
look, you know, from a device perspective, from a hardware perspective, some of this stuff can already happen to some extent, right? But you know what's interesting about automation, and this is the great unknown, is we tend to always assume that it's the sort of blue-collar, physical, labor-driven jobs which are a threat from robots or from automated entities. But the truth is, the evidence would seem that it's actually white-collar workers who are more a threat from what's happening in automation right now. And you got to consider yourself, you know, if you're a laborer who picks items, say, you know, in, you know, to do an inventory check, you pick up items, you put them in a warehouse, you're probably at the moment still relatively safer compared to, say, someone who spends their day poring through spreadsheets trying to collate data. Your job's probably much at a much greater risk.
Okay, so you've freaked out our entire listenership. Thank you, Supratim. Appreciate that contribution. Sarah Al-Attam, are you excited about having a self-driving car? I am.
I am, yes.
So when can this happen?
I think it's still a long way off. I think in terms of going back to Supratim's comment around the automation and the labour market, I think there's an interesting area around the connected house and cleaning and making your life perhaps a little bit easier with automation. And so driverless cars is one example of that. Having a connected house that just can do things for you via a smartphone app that you can control will be really useful as well. And knowing that you can come home, the air conditioner's on, the fridge has let you know that what the shopping list is. Driverless cars have come to pick you up because they know that you're finishing your day at this time in your calendar and you're ready for a lift home. I think that will be, that's been really, really interesting to see those developments as well. Google is certainly still working on their driverless cars. We've also seen a few comments from Mercedes and Ford on projects that they're working on, but whether they come to fruition, we'll see.
You're listening to RN Drive, and if you're just tuning in, we're wrapping up the year's best technology news or developments, if you like, with Sarah Al-Attam from digital Agency August and Super Tim Adhikari, who's the technology editor at The Australian. Your big one that you think was really good, Sarah, was you've nominated wearable technology. So is that Apple's been big in this space. What
yes.
kind of things have happened that you're very excited about?
This is interesting. So we've seen the Apple Watch be released this year.
Yeah, the Prime Minister's a big fan of that. You're always
yes.
seeing him on his Apple Watch.
Yes. But we've also seen a whole range of other wearables that are connecting with smartphones and with other devices. And that kind of integration between wearables has been really interesting this year. So there have been lots of activity trackers that have come out. Some of them have been crowdfunded. Others have been produced by larger organisations. But to see them connecting with other wearables and other smartphone apps is quite interesting, because that hasn't really been happening before. We've seen the devices sit alone and kind of give you a whole lot of data, but then to know that they can connect up with, say, heart rate monitors and different apps that you can then download and track that data, that's quite interesting.
What do you think, Super Tim? Are you kind of excited by this wearable, you know, thing?
Yeah, I'm perhaps, you know, my sort of enthusiasm towards wearables is a little bit more tempered, I think. But,
yeah?
I mean, I think
Why?
Sarah makes a very good point with regards to, you know, that they certainly are at a point where now they're pointing and they're becoming a precursor to that IoT, Internet of Things-driven mm. world that people are talking about. Now, I think beyond a shadow of doubt, IoT was the biggest buzzword of the year. And you have to get used to it and expect to hear a lot more of it in 2016. But wearables, I think, are a great stepping stone to that. So, you know, not every smartwatch or every activity tracker is a massively innovative piece of technology, but it's the promise of what they could potentially deliver, which is the idea of a number of mobile devices working collectively, communicating with each other collectively within a standardized environment to provide a better outcome. That could be a health outcome, that could be a better retail outcome. But most of all, it's about optimizing. It's about optimizing the information that you have, the information that you create, and the information that you can use to make better choices. So in that sense, I think, and because of the entry of Apple into this space, you kind of expect broader mainstream adoption. So that helps. And I think that has been important this year. But whether, you know, smart watches themselves have
a
long-term future.
Yeah, see, I'm not there yet. Because, I mean, I'm technology mad, right? Like, I'm, you know, I'm happy for my iPhone to run my life and to do everything, think for me and function for me. I'm there. I'm that kind of person. But I don't want an Apple Watch yet, because I don't feel like it's at the level that I want it to be. So I'd rather wait. Is that reasonable?
Yeah, because in some cases, you know, you're looking at pieces of technology which are offering things that you may or may not have actually any use for, mm-hmm. right? I mean, and I think that's the critical thing for any technology adoption. It's a question of that inherent value that devices have for people, and at what point does a society at a broader level sort of pick up on that and accept that, look, I really need this particular device to do something specific. Mm. You know, phones have by and large done that, right? So they've become...
Are we getting to the point, Sarah, where we're kind of inventing problems so that technology can solve them for us?
I don't think we're getting to that
point. A philosophical question.
Yet.
But,
I think possibly
we'll
get there.
Let's find out what we could get this device to do. Hang on a minute. I don't really have a problem right now, but I'm going to get myself one.
I think at some point there will be an intersection of wearables and automation as well. And
you're blowing my mind.
Oh my gosh.
Paint a picture.
Well, I think where the point is that we can be using, say, an Apple Watch, for example, to send a note to our driverless car to come pick us up will be pretty awesome. Mm. When different wearables are monitoring your own activity to alert your fridge that something else is going on, or to help you complete business processes at work, that would be pretty awesome. But I think we're not there yet. I think we've still got quite a lot of work to do. But it'll be interesting to see, for sure.
Let's get to the innovation agenda, okay? I want to check, though, first that you're feeling agile enough to have this conversation. No, I do.
Pretty agile.
Agile, because we need to be feeling very agile. It's the word. It's the word of agility. How do you think both Malcolm Turnbull's tech pitch has gone down, Super Tim?
I think by and large it's had a very good reception. You know, there's always a an element of sniping, and as all government policies, there'll always be a group of people who will feel marginalized, or perhaps they didn't receive the emphasis or the attention that they wanted. But
there's a lot of risk, though, built into all of those measures, aren't they? Risk to the taxpayer, which we haven't really seen quite like that before.
Well, yes and no, in the sense that, look, I think, the headline figure seems, kind of punchy and weighty. But, truth be told, it's not the fiscal elements of this policy, the amount of money, be it that the government is promising, and the tax incentives that the government has put in are perhaps are not as important as you would think, this simple policy measure will not effectively turn around everything that's been going on in this sector, or on whether we're innovative enough or whether our startups are going to be world beaters or not, right? But it is a good, healthy step, and the fact that it is a step that's being taken by both sides of politics, I think, is also being widely welcomed by the startup sector.
Sarah, is there a chance that Australia could actually become the Silicon Valley of the Southern Hemisphere? It sounds pretty awesome. The Silicon Valley of the Southern Hemisphere.
What
is that
title?
Something we even want to do?
I think that it's a step towards us catching up to Silicon Valley in a way. Australia is certainly a long way behind in this tech space, and we've seen that with a lot of tech companies going overseas, whether it's the UK or the US, in order to find a better legal structure and a better corporations law for them to operate under. I think this innovation plan is a really good step to us improving our situation here and making a bit more of a level playing field as well for smaller startups right through to big business.
And I'm getting a few funny texts. This one's pretty good. My grandfather used to say, before mobile phones, I don't ever recall seeing a queue at a phone box. But now
Love
we
that.
Urgently need to communicate with each other about everything, every moment of the day.
Instant on.
It is. We are. We're over-communicating, let's be honest. We're crazy for it. Finally, I'm going to ask you both for a nomination of the coolest technology that emerged this year. We haven't got a lot of time, but before I do, I'm going to play a clip.
I have placed information vital to the survival of the rebellion into the memory systems of this R2 unit. My father will know how to retrieve it. You must see this droid safely delivered to him on Alderaan. This is our most desperate hour. Help me, Obi-Wan Kenobi. You're my only hope.
As any self-respecting Star Wars fan will tell you, that's the famous scene, of course, in Star Wars that introduces Princess Leia via hologram, which is the perfect introduction for this fantastic woman. Super Tim, I understand your nomination for the coolest tech breakthrough represents a big leap in the kind of holographic technology depicted in the movie?
That's right, that's right. It's exactly the sort of technology that someday perhaps will allow us to leave such plaintive messages to, to the rest of the world.
I'm hologramming in front of you right now.
Yeah. But
that
look,
involves me twinkling my fingers, yeah?
I thought HoloLens was quite an interesting device this year. You know, it's obviously very much still a proof of concept sort of a device. And in the grander aspects of, virtual reality, which has also had a banner year this year, the HoloLens, I think, is really interesting because, it goes a little bit beyond just pure virtual reality, which is where you enter a construct that's artificial. HoloLens is about, also brings in elements of augmented reality, which allows a person to interact with the real world. And that's got very exciting applications.
Sarah, we've only got a minute. What's the best thing that came across your desk this year?
I'd have to say it's Pepper the robot, the emotionally intelligent robot. He was sold 1,000 units in Japan in one minute. It was insane. But he's actually now going to appear in 3 French train stations to help out with customer service. He's pretty awesome.
Yeah, because the emotional element is quite significant. I remember talking about it.
So he learns a user's behaviour and their reactions to how he talks to them as well. And so he remembers different things that they've said and then responds to that.
He's good.
Yeah,
he's good.
Good.
I've got a text message. I've got to read it. You are over-communicating. I am not. It is a choice. You're right, it is a choice. And I've made my choice. I'm communicating right now. Thank you, guys.
Thank
I've really
you.
Loved
You're
having
welcome.
You on all here and tonight. Sarah Al-Attam is from digital agency August, and Super Tim Adhikari is technology editor at the Australian newspaper. It's news time now, but we'll be back in five with highlights of the best stuff from Drive this year.